Hi, everyone, and welcome to Connections. It's Monday, and we're starting a brand new week here and a big week of anticipation here for Massachusetts as we'll find out what will reopen and when will certain things possibly reopen in the days ahead when the governor speaks later on today here in Massachusetts. With some insight from the State House, State Representative Ted Spiliotis, who not that long ago announced that this is his last term, that he will be retiring at the end of this term. He serves Danvers, a piece of Peabody, and a little bit of Middleton as well in his district. And Ted Spiliotis, state rep, will be joining us in just a moment here on the program. And also, we're going to be talking with old friend Rich Fahey from On Boston Stages, writes for the Boston Globe and other things as well. Rich Fahey will be joining us on our program to talk North Shore Entertainment as well as a bunch of other topics as well. So it's Monday, North Shore Sports Night tonight at 7, but keep staying right with us here on Connections. State Representative Ted Spiliotis is joining us. Representative, thanks for joining us, and happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You, after we talked not too long ago, announced that you were going to be stepping down after this term as state rep after a number of years, and I guess tell us a bit about that decision.
Well, it's something that was on my mind for some time, and the pandemic stepped in the way, and I was planning on retiring, and when the pandemic hit, I said, how do the optics look on this? Crisis situation, legislator bails. And so I was comfortable with staying. I love my job. I love every minute about it. It's just that you get to a certain point in your life and you know that this should be the next step. And then the Supreme Judicial Court on a Friday afternoon a few weeks ago ruled that it was much easier to get signatures now. And that was one of my concerns. How could I leave the legislature and it's so difficult to get signatures during this time? People were setting up booths in front of their homes. They were mailing nomination papers out. And I said, boy, this isn't fair to somebody that really isn't that organized. But then the SJC came down and said, cut the signatures in half, extended the time, even made an option for some type of online type signatures, and making that possible. And I said, well, you know, there's really no reason now. Now's the time to go. This is the time. I've done this my entire adult life, and I just felt it was the right moment.
What do you have planned? I mean, what's on the so-called bucket list after the legislature?
I really don't know. I have a few dreams that people have given me some excitement or some encouragement. My immediate family thinks I'm crazy to pursue something so great or so bold. It's not in government, and it's not something. It would be more like in the nonprofit field, something that I don't really know anyone has ever done, but it would be an interesting project. And I've received encouragement from some folks. But like I said, right now I'm just looking forward to stepping away and, just enjoying the world.
Well, that's a great tease for us, if you will.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, I really can't say. But I'm just, for those folks that don't know me, I'll be 67 when I leave office. I've been doing this, as we probably mentioned the last time, if I continued in the legislature, I would have been the longest serving legislator in the Commonwealth. And that's quite an honor to have. But I also feel that I said this to my sister a few days ago and she laughed. And I hope people understand it this way. I tell folks that you can go to college when you're 50. But it's much easier when you go when you're 18, and when you can retire in your 60s, or you can retire in your 80s. But it seems like it's a lot more fun when you're in your 60s to be able to do other things, and that's really where I'm coming from. just an opportunity to do different things and share life with my family, and that's really what I'm looking forward to.
Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense, Ted. Hey, let me ask you about speaking of business and doing things at the legislature. Sure. Even though you're not in Boston all that much anymore because of the pandemic,
right.
I mean, you guys are all been incredibly busy. So, give us an update or two from the state legislature.
Well, I think the best way to describe it is that when a crisis hits and society comes to a halt, government kicks in. As any democracy, there's a huge debate of how far, what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing, but we're at the center of it. And it has dominated our lives 24/7. We're incredibly sensitized, and we're incredibly connected, like we never have been as a legislative body, as a governmental agent, you know, as a government, from governor on down to our local officials. I mean, we're connected. Everybody has an idea. For example, today, everyone has an idea of what the governor's going to say this afternoon, but everyone is kind of on the edge of the seat, seeing where are we going, how far are we going, what are we doing, and then our constituents are responding quickly to it. We've gotten through the initial shock of the unemployment. We were all submitting and assisting constituents day and night with their unemployment request and trying to get through, and not just people wanting to apply, but people having difficulty getting through the system. And that's slowed down a bit. I still get a few calls a day, but nothing to the dozens of calls I was getting, you know, a few weeks ago, and emails. Now it's more like, you know, for me, and we may have, I don't think I spoke to you since this began, I'm not sure, but for me, the concentration of nursing homes and long care facilities are really the center of a great deal of our attention in the Danvers area. And Hogan, we've had some really serious and frightening phone calls from folks, and they've taken you back. Calls, you know, for example, early on, I got a call from a doctor who was associated with a large chain, and he said, "You have to do something, Teddy." And this is on a Saturday afternoon. Not his place, but his sister facility is in huge trouble. He goes, "It's like a red building. We have so many staff, so many patients or residents that are positive. You have to," and to get that type of call from a doctor just sinks you. And ended up with a National Guard in, and people know the story now, that, you know, that they know what's happened across the Commonwealth. There wasn't the separation that ought to have happened. There was furloughs on staff early on, and there just wasn't the protection. And that's why we see the numbers. It'll be interesting for me to see how it came out nationwide, because I feel we're disproportionately higher in long-term care facilities than other states. And I don't know why. I don't think every state has shown that type of disproportion, where basically almost two-thirds of those that have tested positive or have passed away are in long-term care facilities.
Yeah, that's a good point, and definitely worth finding out, getting more information as we go forward. And well, Representative, I'll let you go at that. I mean, man, there's so much going on, as you've mentioned. And
can I give you a positive?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I think that, you know, and we're starting to hear it, but, you know, climate change was the number one issue before this. And the one thing that's very positive is the air is cleaner, our water is cleaner, and everything seems to be doing a much better job environmentally, simply because we've taken the cars off the road. And it really is a great selling point for being able to convert our automobiles. And if we can convert factories overnight to do ventilators and testing materials and stuff, I think we could convert our auto industry. And I think we ought to seriously use this opportunity to say to folks, hey, look, we owe it to ourselves to extend life, not just today, but for the next several generations. And we can do it, and it's easy. We proved it. The statistics are there. And I think that they're, my successors and others ought to pick up the mantle for that. And I think that that's a very positive thing that's occurred.
You know, and a related thought I've been having the last few days is that, with all this talk of reopening, Ted, if you do have to go out for an errand or get out in the car and do something, at least there's no traffic and it's terrific. But right. That is all going to end at some point, isn't it?
It's going to end fairly soon, I think. I think the demand is great for people to resume. But it's as a legislator, it's something that is, I don't know, I want to use the right term, but it's a little frightening to reopen. It's exciting for folks, but really, we're just getting a handle on this. And, until we get a vaccine, people have to be very careful, and I hope they stay vigilant.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. Well, Representative, great talking with you. Hopefully we'll talk again not too long from now. But again, thanks for your time and best of luck moving forward with whatever that plan
is.
Thank
you for thinking of me. Take care.
You got it. Representative Ted Spiliotis with us.
A daily news podcast for the North Shore. North Shore Today. North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7. As we keep you connected with the North Shore.
Rich Fahey is joining us, and he is the former news and sports editor of the Daily Item of Lynn, writes for the Boston Globe, and has a blog on Boston Stages. Rich, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm great. I'm fine, I guess. Fingers crossed right now. We're here. Still going. I don't hear a lot of people saying that. Hey, I'm great,
No, I'm good. I just got back from my run. I recommend... fresh air is good for the body, mind, and soul. I'm up on that. It's a beautiful. Well, it stopped raining. The sun's out. It's warm. Not bad.
Yeah, you got it. And beautiful for that. And Rich, I want to. You did an interview with us a few weeks ago, and then this past weekend, I guess it was a week and a little over a week ago in the Sunday Globe, your story was in there on. The Senior Olympics, if you will, and you got a bunch of feedback from that article.
Yeah, I did. I got a lot of emails. I had two emails said it was the best thing in the paper that day, and that's gratifying. And a lot of other people said you made me laugh, because anytime these days you can make people laugh and get a chuckle, you're doing the right thing, because certainly there's no dearth of bad news. And I think the humor that we used to rely on, finding it everywhere, is in short supply. So going forward, I'm going to try and find that wherever I can. And if I can make people laugh or chuckle or whatever, which I hope I did this time, then love to do that again, because I really think you can't. Humor is always valued. It's always the best medicine, but none more time than this time.
Exactly. I mean, you do have to be careful when it's regarding certain things, but clear.
I try to write universal themes about people that we can all agree on. I don't want to say exclude a portion of the audience for one reason or another. For somebody thinks this way, somebody thinks that way. I'm going to try and write something that everybody can enjoy, everybody can agree on. And the best way to do it is kind of laugh at yourself. Laugh at me. I'll laugh at me. I'll laugh at us seniors as a group, perhaps, our foibles as a group that we all share. I think if I can do that, I don't have to make anyone really unhappy. Some people may like it, some people may not, but no one's going to really have to feel like they have to fire up and send me a nasty note. So anyway, that's what I'm trying anyway. these days.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone sending Rich Fahey a nasty email. That would no.
5 years in newspapers, Bill. You you have a very thick epidermis.
Hey, your column, your blog on Boston Stages, you're hearing that there are some theaters that might be reopening in the, I would say, in the months ahead here, or at least making plans. What can you tell us?
As you know, everything is being written in pencil now instead of pen, but I see we're Gloucester Stage right now, and Gloucester Stage Company up in Gloucester is planning a July reopening. I know North Shore is still several months away because they just didn't want to take the chance of scheduling, paying people, getting everything ready, and then having to cancel at the last minute because that's very, very expensive. So I think people are being very cautious. Obviously, the theaters have to go in and retrofit. I don't know how they're going to do it. Some theaters aren't that large to begin with. I know Gloucester Stage, I think, is 200 seats or a little bit less perhaps even than that. I don't know how they're going to set it up. I don't know if it's economically feasible. It might be, say, to have 100 seats instead of 200 seats. I don't know how that's going to work. So there's a lot of questions, millions of questions out there. The governor hasn't even released any guidelines for anything like a theater or a concert hall or anything. So, I mean, right now they're scheduling on faith. Theaters are scheduling on faith, but most of the major theaters have announced plans for their seasons coming up that begin in the fall. Only a few theaters operate in the summer anyway. The summer circuit is Gloucester and it's North Shore and a few other theaters. But everyone else is planning to open in the fall in some form or fashion. So that will be interesting to see how that happens and how that evolves, because I think there is a pent-up demand to do a lot of things, obviously. And I am of the opinion that people will want to go out, take precautions, but will want to get out there and start doing things. And that might mean, you know, my other hat, and I put my other hat on, sports. I'm hoping at some point to be able to officiate field hockey and softball and track. I know the Globe is working on a story that will be coming up soon about school sports and the game officials aspect, how it might work for officials when they go back to officiate games this fall. How is that going to work? What kind of precautions? What kind of, you know, because we are literally inches in many cases away from players. I mean, when I'm leaning over the catcher's left shoulder to call a pitch in softball, we're inches away, and there's no way around that. I don't know how you can call a pitch in softball without being fairly close to the catcher, you know. So that'll be interesting. I'm waiting to see that story. I had recommended a few sources for the Globe when they were going ahead and writing that story, so I'm hoping that's interesting, to shed some light on what might be happening down the line, because every aspect of school, if they do return in the fall, and I certainly hope they do, to the classroom, every aspect of the school life itself is going to change and going to have to be reconfigured and refigured. So this is just one aspect, but to many students, it's an important aspect, just like the drama club is, just like the band is, just like everything is. So the planning has to go on now, and it has to go on pretty quickly.
There's so many things to pick up on, Rich, what you just said, but I'm thinking that If I were an official, you know, maybe they could make some rules where you could stay further back, and then when you blow a call, and not saying you do, Rich, I'm just saying officials in general, I mean, you have an excuse, you know?
Well, it doesn't come into play in some sports as much. When I officiate field hockey, I'm not really getting very close. I mean, the only time we have a pregame conference, and of course we could do that a little differently and not be very close to one another. But then during the officiating of the game, there's no point really where I have to be very close to a player or coach or anything like that. So I think it's going to be different for every sport and the precautions they have to take and the way they have to move and everything and yeah. Be stationed. So that will depend on each sport, and I think each sport will have to address that individually, I assume. But we'll see. We'll see how it all works out. I just hope that kids can get back because, you know, we come back every year and we can officiate for a very long time, but these kids have one shot at it in many cases, or two shots. And for the vast majority, that senior year, that's it. I mean, they're not going to probably go on and play this sport in college. Some will, obviously, but the vast majority won't.
I love the way we can jump from sports to theater and back, whatever, to the coronavirus. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, but all due respect to you, Rich, and to our friend Julie Halloran, who officiates field hockey. And I had daughters that played field hockey. No one knows the rules in field hockey. I mean,
it's one of the great advantages for the officials, Bill, is that not only does no one know the rules, they change the rules all the time. And I'm talking major rules. You say, oh, geez, they can do that now? They couldn't do that last year. So but the rules change, and they can be very complicated because every time there's a lot of very subjective calls in field hockey where it's not quite black and white. It's gray. So what you try to do is make a very assertive, forceful call and say, he must be right. He seems very convinced of it. So I hope that carries the day. But I think a lot of it is experience. I didn't play field hockey, obviously, in high school. So I had to start from ground zero, and it took several years to really get kind of a grip on what you're doing. And then years after that to really refine things because I work with female officials who have played it in high school or in some cases in college or coached it, and they're teaching me as we go along in many cases, and they're very good. And they're with early years they were very understanding and patient, but experience is the way you, obviously like anything else that you learn things.
Yeah. I'm just bouncing back to theater for a second here, and I noticed or entertainment, and I noticed where the Rockport Music canceled their summer events. So we're seeing summer things canceling here for sure. We're seeing fireworks and different things like that. So, and as far as theater looking ahead, Rich, you know, when we're looking at everything through the lens that we have today, and in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that could all change. It could all look different. You never know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why people have been really smart in pushing things several months down the road whenever they could, because that way it gives them time, say, even 2 months from now, where they approach, they can say, oh, gee, it's not going to work for September. Now I have to move back again or whatever. So I think people are just erring on the side of caution right now, and if things get better, Shayla and Lou is such a beautiful, beautiful venue in Rockport. I've seen a couple shows there. I mean, it's just an amazing place to see a concert, and that's a big loss to the region. I know that's a popular spot. I love to go up to Algonquin, Maine in the summer for a show, and they've canceled their entire year. Mm. So, I mean, that's kind of a big blow to that area. If you know Algonquin in that area in southern Maine, that's a big engine, economic engine up there.
Yeah, a lot of tragic. You know, the one bright spot, I think, for you, Rich, is that you can come up to Route 1 and maybe review some movies at the new Kowloon Drive-In Movie Theater.
You know, the Wong family, I used to cover them, their comedy shows and everything, and interviews, and do some interviews. And they're great people. I mean, they just are wonderful, wonderful people. The salt of the earth, and I can't wish them enough success because I think it's a wonderful idea. I think it's just, you know, you have to think outside the box, and obviously they're doing that.
Gotcha. Well, Rich, always good talking with you, and stay safe, and it's good to hear you're still running. That's terrific, huh?
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, it's funny. My old routine was I'd go to the gym, and I'd go on the treadmill and the elliptical, and I'd do some machines, you know, and things, and then I go out and officiate, and that was workout too. That was a good workout, but obviously I don't want to be the thing. So I had never really stopped running per se, but I kind of put it in the back pocket and did it once in a while. So now I'm back, and as you know, I had a road running column, Bill, for 25 years, covering North Shore road racing and regional road racing. I did 25 Boston marathons, I think it was. I covered through the years, so I've actually been kind of running for a little more than 40 years, I think 42 years, something like that. So, you know, I put it down and bring it back, and maybe I'll go out and do a couple of races when they come back. I'll slog through them. I don't even know if you can call it jogging anymore. I think it's slogging. But I'm hoping, I turned 70 in a few months. I'm hoping now I'll creep up into the 70 and over category, so maybe I'll be competitive again.
You get up in the winner's circle again, why?
Yeah, I used to win the 200-pound class once in a while when I was younger. When I was young and in shape, I won a few 200-pound runner class trophies.
But let me just point out to the folks listening that you may have been 200 pounds, but Rich, well, how tall? How tall are you?
6'4" and a half.
Yeah.
Same height as Ted Williams, who I have a great picture of. Me and I in the Fraser Field press box looking eye to eye and when he visited to see the Bristol Red Sox play Lynn way back when in the day. So, yeah, we were the exact same height, and we were looking at each other eye to eye and standing in the press box.
Well, at least you're. There's a joke there. I'm sorry. I'm going to leave it though. I'm not going to touch it. All right, Rich. Thanks so much for joining us. Always great talking with you. And again, we'll talk again soon.
All right. Be well, Bill.
Yeah. Rich Fahey with us here on Connections. Writes for the Globe, and as we mentioned, also officiates high school sports and has the blog on Boston Stages. Again, I guess the good news today, we're going to hear from the governor a little bit later on as to what might be opening or reopening in the days and weeks ahead here in the state of Massachusetts. And more good news for you, we're at the end of our Connections show for today. Don't forget to check out North Shore Sports Night tonight at 7 o'clock with Rick Moore and Tim Kearns. Also, Connections, it's weekday mornings at 10 o'clock. Check back. We got a number of great guests planned for you this week. And again, a special thanks to our guests today. State Representative Ted Spiliotis of Danvers, who just a few weeks ago announced that this is his last term at the State House in Boston, and also Rich Fahey from On Boston Stages, and we do have links to websites for both of our guests that we had on today's program. So Rick is off today, but he'll be back with us, and along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. Again, thanks for joining us here on Connections on MSONewsSports.com.